It's my pleasure this morning to introduce Rabbi Menachem Liebtag, who's well known to many of you and has spoken for Torah in Motion many times. Rabbi Liebtag is one of the pioneers of Torah education via the internet. His weekly essays on Parshat HaShavua, read by literally thousands of subscribers worldwide, introduced a vibrant analytical approach to the thematic study of the Bible and reflect over 20 years of his experience as a student and teacher in the Gush at Yeshivat Har Etzion. He is the founder of the Israel Koshitsky Virtual Beit Midrash and more recently founded the Tanakh Study Center, which you can go online to. It's tanakh.org, and has a full archive of his lectures in various formats. In addition to his educational responsibilities in the Gush, he also teaches at Midrashat Lindenbaum, MMY, or at College for Women. Him and his wife, Thea, have 6 children. They reside in Alon Shvutz, Israel. Won't you please welcome Rabbi Menachem Liebtag.
Hey, the handout to be in the middle. The first handout was the Chumash. What I want to do today is something real simple. It's simply I want to try to create what I like to call an enduring understanding of how Chumash works. I hope it should be very simple. And there's something which is confusing to the reader of Chumash, is that when you read Chumash, you have the impression that you're reading like a diary. Oh, here's what happened. Like, it reads almost like a chronicle. Here's what happened day by day, year by year. We start with Bereshit, with creation, then Abram, the Avot. We come into Egypt, we come out of Egypt, we get the Torah, we sin, we're punished, we sin, we're punished, etc. And then finally, after 40 years, we just about make it to Israel. And the impression is that everything's going on a pretty much normal timeline. Yeah, everyone knows, though, Chazal the statement, in Mukdam Mukhar B'Torah, that Chumash is not in order. Now, most of us, the first time we heard that in school, we had like a good question on Chumash. Something bothered us. And what was the answer the teacher gave us? Like, don't worry, in Mukdam Mukhar B'Torah, which basically means to the student, stop thinking. What I want to show you today is when Chazal say, in Mukdam Mukhar B'Torah, they don't mean to say stop thinking, they mean to say start thinking. And I want to try to explain today what's behind that Ein Mukdam Mukhar B'Torah is not an excuse. It's a tremendously deep understanding of how Chumash works and how it was composed. And I'll sort of spill the beans of my conclusion in the beginning, so we'll see what direction we're going to. I want to show you is how Chumash, but the cutting advantage of Chumash over Shulchan Aruch, we're not judging who's better or worse. For sure we follow Shulchan Aruch, but the reason why God gave us Chumash first, and Shulchan Aruch only came a couple thousand years later, is that in Shulchan Aruch you learn law by law. You learn, and every law is important, and every instruction is important. But Chumash, sometimes we read Chumash like Shulchan Aruch. But in the yeshiva world, we learn Chumash too much like Shulchan Aruch. In the university world, we read it too much like a history book. Okay? And what's beautiful about Chumash is that it teaches you message not only through its content, but also through its structure. And that's pretty much my main point, which I want to explain what's behind it. Meaning, Chumash intentionally presents its stories, presents its timeline, presents its what follows what? What laws are next to each other? What stories interrupt what laws? And what laws interrupt what stories? The reason for that presentation is to teach you lessons. Chumash is teaching the reader a lesson, not only by its content, but also by its structure. And I want to try and figure out how that happens. First, I want to prove that's how it works in Chumash. And we'll do the boring part first, then we'll do the less boring afterwards. If someone asks you to make a timeline of what happened in Har Sinai, I want to begin with the starting point and ending point. Everyone knows what day we arrive at Har Sinai. That's this week's Parsha. Everyone knows? What day do we arrive at Har Sinai? Everyone, I think we know, don't we? The beginning of, it says, V'chodesh HaShishi, the assumption is, Rosh Chodesh Nisan, was it 2 days Rosh Chodesh? 3 days, a day later, but at the beginning of the third month, we arrive at Har Sinai. Okay? Don't put out the answer if you know it, just let me know. How many people know what day we left Har Sinai? Just for the fun of it. Okay. Understand my question? Everyone knows we arrived in the first year we came out of Egypt. How many weeks was it since we left Egypt that we got to Har Sinai? 6 plus, somewhere between 6 and 7. Yeah. The Torah is given after 7 weeks at Shavuot. But 6 weeks later we arrive at Har Sinai. We arrive at Har Sinai in the third month of the first year. On what day do we leave Har Sinai? Just for the fun of it, just like a show of hands. Wait. I said, don't answer. I just out of, it's not your fault. It's a question of what you learned it in your Jewish education. But no, it's amazing. Very few people know what day we left Har Sinai. And I'll explain to you why no one knows. You know why? Because Rashi doesn't say so. Right? You know where you find out where? What book it's in? It's in Chumash. That's what's amazing. If it was a little Rashi, a little comment, if it was a Medrash, but a pasuk, black and white, it's a beginning of summer vacation. But people, I think, are still in school. Parsha Balotcha. Remember that book? Balotcha? Okay. Just for the fun of it, take a look in Perek Tet. But look at Perek Tet. Perek Yud. Parsha Balotcha. Sefer Bamidbar. Perek Yud. I'm going to show you something interesting. Yeah. In Perek Yud, Rashi tells you something else in that pasuk. In Perek Yud and Sefer Bamidbar, Parsha Balotcha, we have a date when Bnei Yisrael leave Har Sinai. Who can find it for me? Yeah, what pasuk is it? Yeah. In pasuk Yidala, page 611, if you have, most of you have Herzl Mashim, 611. Right. Perek Yud, chapter 10 in Sefer Bamidbar, Pasuk Yud Aleph, Chamishi, to make life easier for Makore. Okay? It says, Vahi b'shana hashinit, b'chodesh hashini b'slim l'chodesh, on the 20th of Iyar, na'lehanan mi'am mishkan haidut, v'aisu b'nei Yisrael, l'masehem bin Har Sinai. We leave Har Sinai on the 20th of Iyar, very close to Yom Yerushalayim. Not by chance. Maybe by chance. Now, how long is that all together? Rashi tells you, doesn't say the date, Rashi gets the calculation. Rashi says on the spot, a year less 11 days. Right? It's 1 year less 11 days. Remember Rashi on the spot? If you have Rashi there, a year less 11 days. There's something really cute though. If you know Sefer Dvarim, you probably never put these two together. Who knows the beginning of Sefer Dvarim? How far is it? Is it from Har Sinai to Kadesh Barnea? At the Rishon, everyone knows? The second pasuk in Sefer Dvarim, Achanasar Yom Michorev Derchas Ad Kadesh Barnea. We add 11 more days, and where are we? We're at the gate of the land of Israel. So, in a certain way, we have a full year, we have theoretically a full year, before from the time we arrive at Har Sinai to we're about to enter the land of Israel, and then things go wrong again. Now, what happens during that year? We all know the key dates without realizing that we know them. During that year at Har Sinai, what takes place? The first 6 days, we're getting ready for Shavuos, aren't we? Moshe goes up, Moshe goes down, we get ready, we make it ready, the whole thing, we say Naseh V'Nishma. Right. Moshe gets the Torah either on the 6th or the 7th, that's a big machloket. Right. And then what happens? Moshe gets, which laws does he get on the day of Matan Torah? The Ten Commandments, any other ones? The Ten Commandments, what laws does he get on the day of Matan Torah? For sure he gets the Ten Commandments. Yeah? And according to Pshat, what else does he get? Parshat Mishpatim. Yeah. If we follow Chumash in order, Parshat Mishpatim is right there. Rashi would disagree, but most commentators all they get that. Then Moshe goes up for 40 days and 40 nights. Remember? What does he receive? Laws, doesn't he? Lots of laws. 40 days and 40 nights. What happens when he comes down? Chetega. What day did he come down? Add 40 days to the 7th of Nisan, of Sivan. Add 40 days. What day does he come down? You know the date by heart, without calculating. The 17th of Tammuz. The 17th of Tammuz, he comes down. Right? He sees the Chet Egel, etc. And he prays for 40 days that God should forgive them. What day does he finish that prayer? If we add 40 days from the 18th? Right? No. 40 days after the 18th of Tammuz? Erev Rosh Chodesh Elul, he finishes. God says, I forgive you. Now let's go and renegotiate our contract. Right? We renegotiated. Now let's go make it official. Then Moshe goes up again for another 40 days, for the third 40 days. He goes up on what day? Rosh Chodesh Elul. What day does he come down? Yom Kippur. Right? All the dates of our Jewish calendar are right there. That's why Yeshiva begins Rosh Chodesh Elul. That's why Yom Kippur is then Yom Kippur. It's not by chance. It just so happens Yom Kippur is the same day Moshe came down. Hope you realize that. Yom Kippur is Yom Kippur because that's the day he came down and received, and God declared his Midot Rachamim, his Midot attributes of mercy. Okay? Right after Yom Kippur, as soon as he comes down with the second Luchot, what commandment? He gathers the people together. What parsha is that in Chumash now? Parsha Vayakel. And what commandment does he tell them about? About the Mishkan. We have a very similar minhag, a beautiful minhag we have in Am Yisrael. Right after Yom Kippur, what do? We go out and we start working on our sukkah. The sukkah is just like the Mishkan. Remember? The Mishkan is the place where God figuratively dwells with us. The sukkah is the same idea that we go out and meet God in a sukkah. And then they build the sukkah for how long? I mean the sukkah. They build the Mishkan. They build the Mishkan for a long time. Anyone knows how long it takes them to build the Mishkan? Not till. They finish building, they put it together on the first of Nisan. That's the end of Sefer Shemot. They put it together on the first day of Nisan, they put it together. That's how much time in between? Almost 6 months? There's a tremendous drush of Chazal that they finished building it. They finished getting all the materials together and the parts together on Hanukkah. And then they waited until Chafei Kislev. They got it together. And then they purposely waited till the first day of spring, which was Chodesh Nisan, because it's a significant date for the ceremony. Okay? Then what happened? Rosh Chodesh Nisan, they put the Mishkan together. What should we do as soon as the Mishkan's done? Where should we go? We should go to Israel right away. What are you waiting for? Why don't we leave Har Sinai the second we build the Mishkan? Anyone know why not? Real simple reason. We talked about it yesterday in Shul. It's called a Kiddush. Know what a Kiddush is? Who donated a Kiddush in honor of the Mishkan being dedicated? Yeah. What parsha is that? That's exactly Parshat Nesol. That's what we read on Hanukkah. That's Chanukah Tanisim. I'll show you the date in a minute. But on the day of Hakamat HaMishkan, how many days does that take? That's a big Kiddush, isn't it? How long is that Kiddush? 12 days, isn't it? Why don't they go to Israel after the 12-day Kiddush? Ask the women. You're not going to try. There's no hotels in there. Sinai yet. There's nowhere to go to. They have to make Pesach. They make Pesach that year, don't they? 2 days later. What should they do as soon as Pesach is over? Where should they go? Israel. Why don't they go right away? There's another story in Chumash you'll know. Remember, there were these modern people there. There were these people who had said, it's not fair that some of us are Tamei. Some of us, we didn't have the opportunity. Some of us were, unfortunately, we were what's called Tamei Lenefesh. We touched a dead body. And we didn't have the opportunity to bring the Korban Pesach. Remember that story? Now, what answer were they hoping to get? You know what, okay, you guys can bring anyhow. It's okay. God says, okay, you really want to bring? Fine. But guess what? Wait till the next new moon. Wait till the next full moon. And what's God tell him? You can bring Korban Pesach, but you have to wait till the 14th. That's Pesach Sheni, correct? Right. So we wait another month. We'll help them out. Because we don't want to go to Israel without everyone bringing Korban Pesach. And what day did we leave Har Sinai? Pesach Sheni is over. 2-3 days later, off we go. Understand? That's the year of the desert. Now, watch what we're going to do now. I'll show you how we did that story. That date of Rosh Chodesh Nisan when they put up the Mishkan, I want to show you where it shows up in Chumash. Open up the end of Sefer Shemot. The very end of Sefer Shemot. Perek Mem. The section no one ever gets to. Remember, Vayakel Pekudei is a double parsha. Usually it's Parsha Lachodesh. Right? Maybe the Balkari is paying attention. And no one else is following. Okay? Chapter, it's in your Hertz Chumash, it's 389. Chapter 40 of Sefer Shemot, Perek Mem, Pasuk Aleph. Vayedaber Hashem Moshe Lemor. V'yom HaChodesh HaRishon B'Echad HaChodesh Takim Et Mishkan Oh HaMoed. What's God tell Moshe to do? On the first day of the first month, erect the Mishkan. Skip to Pasuk Yod Zayin. Verse 17. Shishi. No doubt about it. Skip to the end of the parak. What happened? Pasuk Lamedalet. You follow? Sefer Shemot ends with the Shekhinah coming back to the Mishkan. They build the Mishkan, they erect it, and the Shekhinah returns to it. Understand? Now, keep your finger here if you want, and go right where we were before, back to Parshat Valotcha, and actually Parshat Naso, Perek Zayin in Sefer Bamidbar. Remember? Perek Zayin in Sefer Bamidbar. And we'll see the exact same date. Page 596, if you ever heard Chumash. Chapter 7, Pasuk Aleph, Perek Zayin, Pasuk Aleph, and Sefer Bamidbar. I'll read slowly. I'll try. Vayhi biyom chalot Moshe lakim et haMishkan. It came to pass on the very day that Moshe finished erecting the Mishkan. What day is that? The first day of Nisan. Vayimshach oto, he anointed it and he sanctified it. Then vayakriv v'nisei, and then all the leaders of the tribes came and said, "We're going to donate, make a donation." First, they bring the wagons, etc. Okay. The same day, the same event in two different books. But that's not enough. Go back now to Sefer Vayikra Perek Tet, Parshat Shmini, Perek Tet, and Sefer Vayikra, the beginning of Parshat Shmini. There it says, it came to pass on the eighth day, Moshe gathered Aaron and his sons and all the elders of Israel and the whole people, tell them to bring a korban, and then he tells them, in Pasuk Vav, Vayomer Moshe, Zeh Hadavar Asher Tziva Hashem Tasu. This is what needs to be done so that God's glory will come to you. Basically, what day is that again? The day of Hakamat HaMishkan. What do we find? The very same day of the day that they erect the Mishkan, the story of what happened on that day we find in one chapter in Sefer Shemot, chapter 40. The exact same day we have a different perspective of the events in chapter 9 of Sefer Vayikra. The very same day we have a different story about the events in Sefer Bamidbar. And that's the best proof of all of in Mukdam Mukhar B'Torah. Now, why does that happen? Today's Super Bowl today? What time does the game start? Yeah? What time does the game start? Oh, okay, so we're free. That's why it was only half day the program. When you'll be watching the Super Bowl, okay, what are you going to have? There's a lot of cameramen, aren't there?
And
Colts, right? Two teams. What are you going to find? There's going to be a camera on the sideline. There's going to be a camera in the end zone. There's going to be a camera probably up in a blimp somewhere on top of the stadium. And when you're watching the game, you can watch it from different cameras. Correct? Now, each camera is going to give you a different view of the same game. It's the same game, but each camera you're going to see different points. And that's what's happening in Chumash. Every book of Chumash is sometimes going to have its own angle. It has its own camera. It has its own perspective. And therefore, don't be confused that sometimes you get the exact same game. You get it from one angle, and then you get the exact same game from a different angle. And it looks like it almost contradicts itself sometimes. But when you realize each one is in a different spot, you'll realize why you appear to get a different picture. And you want to get the whole picture, you have to start blending all the pictures together. Now, with that in mind, let's try to understand what mitzvot we're given when. How is Chumash going to work? Moshe goes up, after he gets the Ten Commandments and Parshat Mishpatim, he goes up to Har Sinai for 40 days and 40 nights. You know what he goes up to get? That's going to be our point of departure in the Shir now. Okay. What we're going to see is Sefer Shemot talks about how Moshe goes up and Moshe goes down and Moshe goes up and down, etc. But what doesn't it tell you? It doesn't tell you what laws he got, except for about the Mishkan. Okay. Take a look in Perek Chaf Dalet in Sefer Shemot. Okay. Moshe goes up in Perek Chaf Dalet in Sefer Shemot. Pasuk Yudbet, the very end of Parshat Mishpatim. Pasuk Yudbet, we just need one pasuk. We'll see how simple it is. Page 322, if you have in your Herz Chumash. Again, Perek Chaf Dalet, Pasuk Yudbet, 24:12. Okay. Vayomer Hashem Moshe, Ale Elai Hara, come up the mountain, Veyesham and be with me. But Nalachat Luchot Eben, I'm going to give you the two luchot, the two tablets made out of stone, v'ha-Torah v'ha-Mitzvah, and the Torah and the Mitzvah, asher katavti lahorotam, which I've written to teach them. Moshe is going to get up, whatever the Torah Mitzvah is, we'll see later on. Moshe is going up to get a whole set of laws. He tells them, I'll be back, and look at the last pasuk of the Parsha, the very last phrase, and Moshe was on the mountain for 40 days and 40 nights. According to Chazal, what did he receive during those 40 days and 40 nights? All the laws. What laws are recorded in Sefer Shemot? At most, the Mishpatim we had already. At most, what do we have? Parshat Truma, maybe the laws of the Mishkan. We're going to see later on that all the laws that Moshe Rabbeinu received on Har Sinai are not recorded in Sefer Shemot. Guess where we're going to find them? Some of them we're going to find in Vayikra. Give me an example of laws that Moshe got on Har Sinai that are in Sefer Vayikra. It's like asking who is buried in Grant's tomb. What Parsha was given to Moshe Rabbeinu on Har Sinai? Parshat Bahar. Remember? Parshat Bahar was given on Har Sinai. Nonetheless, it's written in Sefer Vayikra. Okay. All the laws in Sefer Dvarim, Moshe is going to say, were all given to him on Har Sinai. But we only find out about him in Sefer Dvarim. There's tons of laws like Pura Aduma. Were given to Moshe Rabbeinu at Har Sinai, maybe even before Har Sinai. According to some, they were given in Maral. Where are they recorded? In Sefer Bamidbar. So what's the logic behind it? What's the reason for it? So that's what we're going to try and understand now. Right? Why does Chumash work that way? Why can't Moshe go up to Har Sinai and write law by law? Okay. I'm going to give out, I'll read one more pasuk, and then we're actually I'll give out the sheet. And there should be... We're going to read the commentary of a parshan called Chizkuni, who's, okay, if you have your chumash, it's just as good. We'll see the parshan later on. Take one for every two, should be fine. One for every two should be fine. Almost probably should be enough for everybody. Okay. Everyone remembers Michelangelo has a famous sculpture of Moshe Rabbeinu? What's famous about a sculpture? He's got the horns. You know what the source of that is? Why? Yeah, it's not just because of the word Karen. Well, see, it's not only that. The word Karen in Hebrew means either a ray of light shining or it calls to mean a horn. So we're going to look what happens. Remember we said Moshe Rabbeinu goes up for 40 days, comes down another 40 days, and then goes up for 40 days. The third 40 days, he comes down in Yom Kippur. We're going to read the story in Chumash in chapter 34, Sefer Shemot, Perek Lamed Aleph. Pasuk Chavtet, 34:29. We're going to read the story of what happens when Moshe comes down from Har Sinai. What should happen? When he comes down from Har Sinai, what laws should he give the people of Israel? All the laws he got in Har Sinai, right? Let's see the story. Perek Lamedalet Pasuk Chavtet. Have it? If you have your Hertz 368 or the page I gave you, it's right on top. It's big letters there on top. Page... Perek Lamed Daled, chapter 34, Pasuk Chavtet, Pasuk 29. Vayibred et Moshe behar Sinai, u'shnei luchot eidut v'yad Moshe. Moshe is coming down from Har Sinai, he's carrying the two tablets, coming down the mountain. U'moshe lo yada ki koran or panav v'dabro ito. Moshe didn't realize that his face was shining. Mistranslated, once upon a time as, Moshe didn't realize that his face had horns. Okay. Vayar Aaron v'chol b'nei Yisrael et Moshe, Aaron and the children of Israel saw Moshe. Vinei Koran or Panav. They saw his face was shining or had horns. Okay. Then it says, Vayiru Migeshet Elav. What's that mean? They were fearful. Now, what caused the fear? You see what caused the mistranslation? Why are they so what are they afraid of? Just because someone's face is shining, they're afraid. He was in Florida. What's so scary about him? And therefore, it's understood it because, you understand the mistranslation? Because of the fear, they thought it must mean horns. Like, obviously, it's the wrong translation, but that translation led to Michelangelo's famous sculpture with Moshe and horns, and hence Jews had horns, and the rest you know from your medieval studies. What? That he had horns? No, he says his face was shining because he was like the... What happened is simple. Why did Moshe go up to get the laws instead of God speaking directly to the people of Israel? They were afraid of him. They were afraid of God. They said, Moshe, you be the middleman. Moshe now replaces God, receives the laws from God. Now Moshe representing God comes down, and guess what happens? They're afraid of him now. And therefore now Moshe is a good educator, he has to break the ice. Pasuk Lamed Aleph. Vayikra lehem Moshe, Moshe breaks the ice. He calls upon them first. V'yashub elav Aaron, v'chon sim v'yda, v'ydaber Moshe lehem. First the elders of Israel. And the big shots come, and they break the ice with them, and they get moving. V'achrechen, afterwards, nikshub kol b'nei Israel, everyone comes to Moshe. And now listen carefully. What does Moshe do? Moshe teaches him all the laws at Har Sinai. Isn't that logical? What should follow here? All the laws at Har Sinai. What do we have instead? Moshe finished talking, then he put this mask on. Back and forth. Means, what happens in Sefer Shemot? We find the story of how Moshe told the laws to Bnei Israel. What don't we find? We don't find the laws. Where do we find them? Some are in Shemot, some are in Vayikra, some are in Bamidbar, and some in Tvari. What laws do we find in Sefer Shemot? What's the next parsha? Parshat Vayakel. Moshe gathers them together, has a special gathering for the Mishkan. You know why? There's a real technical reason why he needs a special gathering for the Mishkan. Anyone who's raised money for a shul, right? You want people to come, you just can't send a letter. You have to call, you have to make a special gathering, you have to have a kiddush, money, etc. And then, food, right? And then make everyone feel guilty, and then, right? And then he has no problem after Chet Egel, and then he raises the money for the Mishkan. That's a special gathering because it's a special point. Now, what's interesting, that those were in the share last night, we touched on that topic. Only after, right? After Chet Egel, Moshe tells the people, what did God say? Build for me a Mishkan, and then, Vasu the Mikdash, what should the Hebrew be? Vasu the Mikdash v'shachanti? V'tocho. Everyone knows that question? We should build a Mikdash and God should dwell in it. What's Chumash Ne? V'tocham. That's not a mistake at all. It's exactly the whole point. We're not building a God doesn't need a house to live in. Just like He doesn't need to be fed, He doesn't need a house to live in. We need Him to be with us. Now, what did God say after Chet Egel? If you remember the story in Parsha Ki Tisa, God said, I'm not coming with you. I can't be in your midst. Ki lo ale bikevracha. I'm not going to go with you to the land of Israel because you're in Amkshe Oras. Right? We can't live together because if we're in the same room together, we're going to kill each other. Remember God says, if you stay on this level, if you want me in your midst, you won't survive because you sin too often. What is Moshe Daven for? Have attributes of mercy. God declares His attributes of mercy. And what's Moshe's prayer right afterwards? Moshe says, Yelech na Hashem b'kirbeinu, even though we're in Amkshe Oras. What did God's attributes of mercy accomplish? It allows a situation where God can be in our midst even though we're not perfect. It's almost an impossible situation. But that's exactly what God's attributes of mercy accomplish, that God can be in our midst even though we're not worthy. Now, what do we need to do for our rehabilitation? What do we need to do? We need to show God that we want Him to be in our midst. We need to do something symbolic. What's that symbolic thing? We have to build a Mishkan. We have to do a national project to show that we really care. But when we build a Mishkan, the point isn't so God has where to live. The point is so He can be with the whole nation. That God will be with the Tocham. God's going to dwell with the entire nation. The concept that God's only in the temple is very dangerous. Because what happens if God's only in the temple, then when people come to the temple, or call that the shul, their behavior is fine. I'm in the temple itself, fine. But if God's in the temple, what's that mean to the untrained mind? He's nowhere else. And what happens when he leaves? I remember growing up, there was always a sign in the shul, please return your yarmulke on your way, back to the box on your way out. Meaning, shul is a shul. When I leave, I resume normal speed. If God's in the shul, I have to act my best. At the act, I'm not going to talk, I'll be quiet, etc. Right? I'll behave. Right? Right? I only talk sports, I won't talk Lashon Hara, I'll be in my best behavior. But the second I leave, it's like visiting elderly, visiting your parents in an old age home. We'll go to them, but they shouldn't come to us, kind of idea. I'll go visit them, I'll pay my dues, etc. But when I'm gone, I'm back to myself. The whole point of Chumash is the visit to the temple, the visit to the Beit HaMikdash, is supposed to be inspirational so that you realize when you come home, God's with you. You come to the Mikdash not to know that God's only in the temple. You come to the Mikdash to realize God's in your home, with the nation, with the people. And if the Mikdash is taught properly, the Mikdash is the beginning of a relationship. You're not just going to pay your dues, you're going to be inspired to realize God's with you and everywhere you go in life. So with that in mind, right, what happens in Sefer Shemot? What's the topic of Sefer Shemot? Sefer Shemot deals with one primary topic, in my opinion, and that's formulating and finalizing our relationship with God. How does that relationship with God begin in Sefer Shemot? It begins with our enslavement in Egypt and how God comes and redeems us. He's going to sort of court us. There's a courtship coming out of Egypt. He's going to do miracles for us. He's going to do all these great things for us. And he's going to bring us Tar Sinai, the Chazal compared to a wedding. And he's going to say, how can you say no? He's going to make that proposal. And God's going to say, you know, you want to be my nation? I'll be your guide, you'll be my nation. The people can't say no. The relationship reaches its apex in the beginning of Chodesh Sivan. Moshe goes up then for 40 days. In the meantime, the first affair, remember? At the ego. And then it looks like everything's ruined. Nothing can save the marriage until Moshe Rabbeinu does a little counseling. Right? Talks to him, talks to there. And then God decides, you know what? Let's get back together again. And rebuilding the Mishkan is going to be a symbol. It's going to be a type of rehabilitation, but also be a symbol of the desire of the people of Israel. They really want God in their midst. They need to do something to show God that they care. But the goal is that God will be in their midst. That's the focus of Sefer Shemot, and that's why there's so much detail about the Mishkan and Sefer Shemot. Because it's all about our relationship with God. If that relationship isn't solid, the marriage can't continue. Right? And that's why it's so wordy, because that theme is so important. Right? And the Mishkan is a symbol of that relationship, is important. But the laws that Am Yisrael has to keep, as God's nation, we're not going to find them. We have a short version in Parshat Mishpatim, but the detailed version is going to be later on in Chumash. Now, now that God's in your midst, we need another book. We're going to talk about what happens now after Sefer Shemot. After Sefer Shemot, we're going to have Sefer Vayikra, Bamidbar, and Dvarim. We're going to try and figure out what's in each book. But to understand what's happening, on the page I gave you, there's a tremendous chizkuni, which is based on the Gemara and Masechet Gittin, Daf Samech, right? About how the Torah was written. Right? And what most people don't realize, according to Chumash, according to Chazal, according to everybody, Chumash as we have it was written, not at Har Sinai, but in the 40th year in Arvot Moav. Moshe Rabbeinu puts Chumash in his final order. Am Yisrael received Chumash. And there it's even called a Shira at the end of Parsha Ve'elech and Ezinu. Moshe Rabbeinu gives Am Yisrael the final version of Chumash he received from God in the 40th year. What was Chumash like until then? We're going to see the story now. And the Chizkuni will explain what's called Megillah Megillah. I'll explain outside and we'll read inside. Moshe Rabbeinu gets the laws. And writes, every single time he gets a law, he writes it down in a, called a mezuzah. Every time Moshe Rabbeinu received a law, he wrote it down, recorded it, maybe made a couple copies, faxed a couple to Yeshua, remember, his chief secretary. And Moshe Rabbeinu had a whole collection of Megillot, Megillot, Megillot. Now we're going to see what happens in the 40th year. Okay. Look at the Chizkuni. The Chizkuni is commenting on the very last pasuk of a pasuk Lamed Bet in Sefer Shemot, in Perek Lamed Aleph in Sefer Shemot. It says Moshe commanded everything that God said to him in Har Sinai. The first thing Chizkuni is going to do is going to make a comment, and which is summarizing everything we did in the Shir till now. Et kol asher diber Hashem b'tov b'Har Sinai, he says as follows: Kol ha-mitzvot shenemru b'arba'im yom arishonim u'b'arba'im achronim, all the commandments that Moshe Rabbeinu was told by God during the first 40 days on Har Sinai and in the last 40 days on Har Sinai. The Kol HaMitzvot Shnistavu Yisrael, and all the commandments that God gave the people of Israel were given within a certain time frame. Chizkuni says, when? They all began Minisan Shabbat Yetzu Yisrael Mimitzrayim. The first time we got laws from God was in the beginning of Nisan. What's he referring to here? That's Parshat HaChodesh, chapter 12 in Sefer Shemot, last week's Sedra. Parshat Bo, that was the first time we get a set of laws. So we got laws in leaving Egypt. We got laws in Marah. We got laws in Har Sinai. Ad Esrim Be'yar B'Shana Shenit. Until the 20th of Iyar in the second year, that's the beginning of our Shir. Meaning, what's Chizkuni saying? All the laws that Bnei Yisrael need to have, the basic laws they need to have, were given to Am Yisrael as they camped in Har Sinai. Why does that make so much sense? What was supposed to happen after the 20th of Nisan, after the 20th of Iyar that year? You're supposed to go to Israel. You're supposed to travel directly to Israel. And it would have kept them. And the whole purpose of the desert was to learn the laws. And therefore, all the laws should be taught in the same setting. But in the meantime, they stand. Sometimes questions come up like later on, like B'lot Slovcha, like the Mechoshes. Certain questions will come up that they need answers for. But all the laws were given either in the first 40 days, the second 40 days, or after the Mishkan is built, when the Ohel Moed is built, and the Mishkan is built, God gives some more laws in the beginning of Sefer Vayikra. And that's when they were given. Then he says as follows. Avo ha-Torah Megillah Nitina. How is the Torah given? As we mentioned before, Megillah, Megillah. Now he explains what that means. Shelefi shaya Moshe shomea mitzvot mipi HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Whenever Moshe Rabbeinu received laws from God, haya kotev kol achad min begota latzma. Every single one he wrote in a little Megillah by itself like this, maybe a little bigger from parchment. Moshe Rabbeinu had an entire collection of laws. Parshat Tzitzit was a set of laws. Parshat Parah, a set of laws. Egla Rufa, Ben Tzemut. Every set of laws had a little Megillah, some bigger, some smaller. Now watch what he says, where the little marker is. Ukshabali pater min ha'olam, when it came time for Moshe Rabbeinu to die, when's that? The 40th year. In a nutshell, God tells Moshe Rabbeinu in the 40th year, I like to say, publish and perish. You know the saying from university? It's here, it's publish or perish. Here it was publish and perish. He's saying, you finish your job, Moshe Rabbeinu. Leadership-wise, no. The board kicked him out. But Torah teaching-wise, he was a tremendous teacher. You follow? Like Moshe Rabbeinu, and the story in Sefer Bamidbar, leadership-wise, he just can't seem to work with the people, but Moshe is known as the greatest teacher. Moshe Rabbeinu. He's a teacher. What's God tell him to do? Time to publish. And therefore, what should Moshe do? All the laws that he received, what should he do with them? All the laws that he got, should record them. Now, if Moshe was a Yekke, what would he do? It was before Germany, so there was no Yekke then. But let's say he was a Yekke. What? Yeah. Maybe he would publish two books. One would be a book of laws. Later it would become Shulchan Aruch. And he put all the laws together. If he had a Rambam mind, maybe put it in, you know, codify it a little more. And there'd be another book of stories. He could get a good job for Art Scroll. He put a whole Jewish history from Breshit. Right? He'd have two books. The story of the Jewish people, one narrative. Another book, a book of laws. Or maybe put, you know, two sections. And then how would he organize it? If he was a real Yekke, he'd organize it exactly by the date stamp. You know, date by date, chronicle order, like in a library. Everything in chronicle order, maybe with an index. You follow? That's what you expect him to do. That's not what he does. That's not what Kadosh Baruch Hu tells him to do. Listen to what Chizkuni says. It says, Ukshabali patem min olam, sider sefer Torah, v'kabab bo ha-parshiyot ad hayom hazeh, lefi ha-smuchin ha-ruin lehem, kamo shedoshu rabotenu. How does he organize them? Don't organize them like a Yekke. Take this opportunity to turn it into a composition. And how are you going to organize them? Not in chronological order, not necessarily halachic order, but in thematic order. Because the fiyat smuchin, what's called smuchot parshiot, kamo shedoshu chachamenu. Meaning, what do Chazal understand? Chazal understand that Chumash is pre-coded. And this is a tremendous assumption that Chazal make. There are so many, remember when we reached Chumash as a student, oh, how come this is out of place, how come that's out of place, and they start getting these answers? The assumption isn't that it's poorly written. When you notice something that doesn't seem to flow properly, when you notice all of a sudden there's an abrupt stop and all of a sudden something's out of place, all of a sudden there's words missing, all of a sudden the same pasuk's repeated, all of a sudden we just move topics with no logical reason, all of a sudden we say one reason for Shabbos here and one reason, different reason for Shabbos over there. Okay? The assumption is that's intentional. That's not poor composition. That's intentional composition. And what's the reason for that composition? In order to Doresh. Lama nitzmacha parsha zu? Why was this juxtaposed to that? Meaning, Chumash was originally written by a Kodesh Baruch and Moshe Rabbeinu Incorporated. You know, exactly how much Moshe was only taking word for what God told him to do, and how much he himself was involved, that's a technical argument. Either way, it's important what happened. But the assumption is that Chumash is pre-coded, its order, its structure, is coming to teach you lessons. Now you have the next question, who has a license to decode? That's a hashkafa argument. Definitely Chazal. It's definitely Amoraim Tanaim. If you remember Korbanot, remember that right before we say we have to get another Kaddish in the morning? And we do that Rabbi Shmuel. Remember what that's about? What's Rabbi Shmuel say? Yeah. He has a set of laws of how to decode halachic material. How can I learn, for example, Parshat Mishpatim has a lot of laws, but not every law. How am I going to decode that and be able to figure out what laws to figure out laws that don't come up in Chumash? So he says, Chumash intentionally says, you know, uses the same word here and the same over there called Gzera Shava. Sometimes we'll make a principle, and then we'll learn that, we'll call it a Binyan Av. Chumash assumes, I mean, Chazal assumes it's pre-coded. How do you decode? Rabbis had different ways of doing it. Now, are we allowed to do that today? Ask your local rabbi. Okay? But definitely Chazal were able to do that. Now, that's as far as halacha goes. How about as far as Midrash goes? What does Midrash do? Midrash also assumes that what's Chumash doing? Chumash writes stories in special ways, changes the order, jumps topics, right? It changes chronological order in order that we learn a lesson from that as well. Just like we learn a lesson, just like Chumash is pre-coded to teach you halachic messages, that we say that's the basis of all how Chazal understand halacha. Right? Chumash does the same thing with thematic messages. And then the question comes up again, who has the license to decode Chumash for thematic messages? We call them Divrei Torah. Right? Every Shabbos people do that. Right or wrong, but that's the beauty of Chumash. And there's not necessarily one right answer. But Chumash becomes a springboard, assuming that Chumash writes stories in a certain way, it's in order to develop an idea. And if a rabbi, a Tana, or an Amora, or any great rabbi, studies Torah and says, based on this, I have a wonderful concept, an idea I learned from here, that was supposed to happen. And that's what's so powerful. It's like a hologram. But Chumash is so powerful that it carries so many complex messages, and it's possible that one set of psukim can mean many different things. That's what's called Chazal say, kepatish yefotzeitz sela. Just like when a hammer hits a rock and it goes in all different pieces, go in all different directions. That's the beauty of Chumash. Chumash was written intentionally that way. So I'm trying to show you that what Chisuni is explaining is that what we do almost out of habit is based on a very strong understanding of how Chumash was composed. Chumash was composed exactly for that reason. That's what's called, and when therefore when Chazal say in Mukdam Mukhar B'Torah, and Rashi goes out of his way. Remember, they're fighting about that all the time. Ramban and Rashi argue to what extent do we say that. Everyone agrees that it happens sometimes. Right? According to Rashi, which is, reflects most of them, I consider, the first thing I consider is, you know what, I bet this is out of order. Rashi's original assumption is Chumash is in thematic order and not necessarily in chronological order. And he'd prefer it to be out of chronological order in order to find a message. Ramban will prefer to keep it in chronological order and ask the question, I can learn from the fact that it happened that way, not so much was written that way. But many times Ramban will also agree that things are out of order. Sometimes he has no choice. That'll be for a reason. So that's the background, right? Say how Chumash was written as opposed to how it was given. And when we're reading Chumash, we're not reading it how it was given, we're reading it how it was written. And it was written to teach you a message. Now, with the time we have left, I simply want to go over and try to pinpoint what's happening in each book. How each book comes together. Take a look at the very end of Sefer Shemot again. We see something very interesting. The very last four psukim of Sefer Shemot. Sefer Shemot at the very end. And I figure we'll pick something that people rarely ever read. But the very end of Sefer Shemot, we finally build the Mishkan, we have it all together, and we're ready to go. Now, just for background, had not been for Chet Ege, what was supposed to happen? One question you always have to ask when you study is, what was supposed to happen, and then in light of what was supposed to happen, what did happen? Had not been for Chet Egel, we would have gone to Har Sinai, received all the laws on the Torah in 40 days. Moshe would come down and then go to Israel. We'd go to Israel, build a temple, conquer the country, remember, set up this perfect nation, and live happily ever after. In the meantime, we have Chet Egel, sin of the calf, and we have negotiations, we got trouble, and we have Jewish history begins, or continues. But because of Chet Egel, there were two things that were held up. What was one element that was held up because of Chet Egel? What couldn't we do because of Chet Egel until we solved the problem? We couldn't go to Israel. Why can't we go to Israel? We can't go with that until we make up this relationship, until the counselor, right? Yes? We're waiting, right? We're not getting a divorce, but we're not back together yet. Right? We're not going to live together yet, but we're not going to separate. We're going to negotiate. Got to build a nice apartment, you follow? We're going to build a Mishkan. But until the Mishkan is built, we're going nowhere. We can't continue traveling. What else can't we receive? What other process is being on hold? Moshe received lots of laws, and maybe there's more laws to come, we can't continue receiving laws until we're worthy. And therefore, two things are being held up. The law giving is being held up, and as well as traveling. Look what happens at the end of Sefer Shemot. Pasuk Lamed Daled, Mafter, verse 34. Okay. It says, V'chas hanan et olam moed, The cloud covered the Ohel Moed, and God's glory covered the Mishkan. Now, keep your finger here. Hope your fingers aren't too tired from today. And keep your finger right here, and go back to the very end of Parshat Mishpatim, the end of chapter 24 in Sefer Shemot. You'll see almost an identical pasuk. And exactly, Mafter on both. Look at Mafter in Parshat Mishpatim, Perach Avdalad, Pasuk, Tetvav. Okay. Pasuk Tetvav, verse 15. Keep a finger one here, one there. You have to do a little walking. Okay. It says, Vayam Moshe el ahar, Vaychas ha'anan et ahar. Vayishkon kvod Hashem ahar Sinai, Vaychasei unan sheish yamim. Stop here for a minute. What's similar? You see the same words? Let's read it again. Moshe goes up to the mountain. Go back to the end of Perek Mem, the end of Shemot. What's it say? What just happened? Identical words. But what switched? Okay. Instead of Har Sinai, now we have a Mishkan. And that's the Ramban builds on this parallel and says, what's the purpose of the Mishkan? To continue Har Sinai. We should have brought that up in last night's topic, but it's a symbol. Not if it's a symbol of God's presence, what's in that symbol? What that symbol is, what we draw on that symbol, is very meaningful. Everything, because we're trying to recreate the whole Har Sinai experience. Go back now to the end of Parshat Mishpatim. What happened next? Again, let's read Pasuk Tet Zayin. Vayishkon kvod Hashem Har Sinai. Vayichaseu unan Kal covered it for 6 days, and then what happens? Vayikra Moshe b'yom hashvi'i mitoch hanan. What does Moshe do? What does God do? God calls out to Moshe after 6 days to come into the cloud. What's Moshe do? Moshe has to wait 6 days, and then God calls him in, and then Moshe goes into the mountain. For what reason? To receive the laws, the Torah and the mitzvah that God gave him to get. Now, let's read our story in the end of Parshat Pekudei. We'll see something amazing. Let's pick up again from Pasuk Lamed Dalet, from 34. Like before. Then what happens? What happens now? He can't go in. Sounds like what? Sounds like a tragedy. Because if the parallel is complete, what should Moshe do? Moshe should be able to go in. Does he go in? Read on. Does he go in? Pasuk Lamed Vav. And when the Anan would go up from the Mishkan, Bnei Yisrael would travel. And if the Anan didn't go up, they wouldn't travel. And the Anan was on the Mishkan day and night. And eyes of everywhere they traveled by the cloud. Now, okay. What does that mean? Okay. What needs to happen? What would you expect to happen for the parallel to be complete? What should happen? What? God should what? God should call, if the parable would be complete, God should call Moshe and say, come on in. You waited long enough. I understand you have to wait a little bit. You have to wait at the door for a little bit. You don't get the anticipation. But after a while, what should God do? Just like he did here by crying Moshe, and goes to, God should call to Moshe to come in. And for some reason, it doesn't happen. No one's smiling yet. Does it happen or not? Where does it happen? Yeah, but where's what? Flip the page. Look at the next book. The pasuk that's missing at the end of Sefer Shemot is the very, very, very first pasuk of Vayikra. It's not P, Q, and D, E, and G. It's what do you call it? It's 5 minutes? It's not a bunch of different authors, different books. The books fit perfectly. What happens? What we're waiting for in the end of Sefer Shemot happens. We find in the beginning of Vayikra. And what happens? God calls Moshe in to the Ohel Moed. And what does God do? Tells him laws. What laws does he tell him about in Sefer Vayikra? It's right on the mark. Now that God's dwelling in your midst, there's a new set of rules. What are they? They're called Kedusha. Kedoshim to you, ki kedosh ha'neshep. You're a nation representing God. God's dwelling in your, God's staying at your apartment or your house. Therefore what? How you act in that house is a different ballgame. Let's say a big rabbi comes to your house. Okay? What happens? There goes the TV. There goes the phone. Now it's chalav. You follow? Right? The way you're acting in the house is totally different. You can now bring in presents. You can bring korbanot. There's tuma and tara. You don't just walk in. Follow? The whole atmosphere in the house changes because God's in your midst. Those are laws of dusha. And therefore, because God's in our midst, we have tuma and tara, we have dusha, we have korbanot. Especially we have kedoshim to you. You see why that's in the book now. We have Shemitah. If God, we have Aliyah L'Regel, we have Moadei Hashem, where we come to meet God. And if I want to understand what categories of laws does God designate to Moshe to record in a special book called Sefer Vayikra, it's a book of Kedusha. And what causes, what generates these laws? Those are the laws of, because God's in our midst, because we built the Mishkan, and it's there in God's presence in our midst, that behooves us to act in a special way. To be a Mamlechet Kohanim v'Goy Kadosh. As individuals, as people, connected to God. Now, what other process was on hold because the Mishkan wasn't built? Right? Traveling to Israel. Look at the last three psukim now of Sefer Shmot, the ones we skipped. Pasuk Lamed Vav. Ubeyalot anan me'ala Mishkan yisu b'nei Yisrael. Vim lo yale anan v'lo yisu. Ki anan ala Mishkan yomam v'esh You follow? Where do we have the story of Am Yisrael traveling by the Anan? Any Balkari would know. Again, Parsha Balotcha. Take a look where we started this year. Go back to Sefer. Again, Sefer. What Sefer was that? Sefer Bamidbar. Remember we were chapter 10, Perek Yud? You see the exact same psukim. Perek Yud. Right where we started. Pasuk Tedvav. And Pasuk Yud, what was it? Pasuk Yud Aleph. Okay. It was the 20th day of the second month. The Anan goes up, and then Pasuk Yud Bet. Vayisu b'nei Yisrael lematzeim b'midbar Sinai, v'ashkodan bar Midbaran. Vayisu, they travel. If you go back a little bit, in Perek Tet, where God gives the instructions how to travel, in Perek Tet Pasuk Tet Vav, in Revi, in Parsha Balotcha, chapter 9, verse 15. Uv'yom hakim et ha-mishkan, that's exactly the end of Vayikra, isn't it? On the day that Moshe established the Mishkan, built the Mishkan, the Anan covered the Mishkan, and in the evening it was like Esh on top. That's always was that way. You understand? Almost a repeat of the same Sukkim. At the end of Sefer Shmon, I go in two directions. One is, now that we have God's presence in our midst, and we build our Mishkan, and our relationship is back together, now I can continue the process of lawgiving. And I dedicate a law to Kedusha, a book about laws to Kedusha. But I also, now I'm traveling with the Mishkan. We're a nation traveling with the Mishkan. How do we travel now that God's in our midst? How does the army march? How do the people act? That's going to be Sefer Bamidbar. That's the ideal until we should travel. Then the rest of the Bamidbar is about what goes wrong. No, that's our leadership problem. No, with the Mitarim, the Mitavim, the Maglim. Again, not within the 3 minutes we have left. No. What are we left? That's Sefer Bamidbar? Sefer Bamidbar is mostly the story. I'll summarize in a nutshell. The narrative of Sefer Vayikra is a book of laws about Kedusha. Very few narratives, if there's a narrative in Vayikra, it's for the sake of the law. Like the story of Nadav and Avihu has to do with Kedusha and Korbanot. Bamidbar is a narrative that should be the story of how Bnei Yisrael travel from Har Sinai with the Mishkan in their center and come to the land of Israel. That's what it should be. That's how it begins. Remember how we camp, how we get the army together, traveling with the Mishkan in our midst. And we're getting all ready until we get to Vayivin Saharon. The second we leave Har Sinai, what happens? Mitonanim, Mitavim, remember Mraglim, then we have Korach, Baal Peor, all the trouble. Basically, it's a story of how we don't make it and who doesn't make it. Instead of Bamidbar being the story of how we travel to the land of Israel, it becomes a story of how we don't make it to Israel. And the end of the book is how we get ready in the 40th year to go into the land of Israel, and with the second Mifkad, and getting ready to go in. And as the book continues, for thematic reasons, what does Chumash do? It interrupts the narrative with some laws here, some laws there. Follow? Paraduma, for some reasons, in the middle. Okay? It talks about people dying in the desert. The laws of Chagim are there for some reason. Laws of Sotah are there. But the book is primarily narrative, and for thematic reasons, in order to make drashot, what happens? Chumash puts certain laws in the book of Sefer Bamidbar. To conclude, in just 2 seconds, what's Sefer Dvarim? Sefer Dvarim is the Torah and the mitzvah that Moshe went up to get in the first 40 days. What's Sefer Dvarim about? Sefer Dvarim is a set of laws that make us God's nation on a national level. Understand? Not just, if I want to know how an individual has to act because God's in our midst, that's safer by Yikra, that's Doshim to you. How does a nation act that's representing God? How does the army go to war? What type of political leaders? What type of behavior do I expect from my political leaders? Number the Dean of a King. What type of behavior do I expect from my judges? What type of economic system am I going to have? Shemitah. What type of social justice system am I going to have? The laws of Leket, Shechen, Peah, and part of Shemitah. How? Nidachat. No, it's the job of the nation. Marriage laws, social laws, marketplace laws, testimony, judicial laws. It's a nation. How is the nation going to represent God? There'll be elements of the individual, but more so as a nation. Things that nations do, not just individuals do. That'll be separate. Why? It's not a reap. I'm going to host what's sefer dvarim. But it's not just, it's laws that are being repeated, but laws we never had before in Chumash. Moshe is repeating them to Bnei Yisrael for the last time, even though they've heard it many times. The reader of Chumash never saw them before. And therefore, when we study Chumash, I'll summarize. Each book has a theme, has a topic. Well, we just touched on them. But I want to show you what the Chazal say in Mukdam Urchav Torah. It's not an excuse. It begins with an underlying assumption that there's composition, intentional composition, and a composition is in order to teach you a lesson. And therefore, and again, we can argue who has the license to decode. But there's no doubt, in order to appreciate any decoding done in any century of the Jewish people, both halachic and thematic, once you understand how it works, you can appreciate the decoding and the messages that our rabbis give us. The more you study Chumash and understand its structure, the better you'll be able to understand what God's, the messages that God is trying to give us through our study of Tanakh. And that makes Tanakh more for adults, where it's called Chazal say, the more you look at it, the more you... There's no other book that's been studied for thousands of years, and every generation finds new things. It's amazing how it's written. No other book works that way. Almost divine. And its ability to... to carry the message. Okay.
Okay, we're going to have a brief question period. Please make your questions brief and to the point. Thank you.
Question, yes.
Why couldn't God be a little yakish?
Yeah?
You know, you're going, doing all kinds of beautiful presentation.
Yeah.
Creative.
Yeah.
Adding stuff, but a little bit yakish wouldn't have...
How about Tzvidim u'Musafim? Right? The holidays in Pinchas? That's good. The Nisim, nice and organized. He's a little yekish, okay? There's room for that. Yeah, others?
Any other questions?
Yeah, question. Yeah.
I appreciate that some mitzvot appear in a context that relates to the histories that surround them. But why do you have repetitions? For example, we have the mitzvot for the Chagim in Parshat Neso and Parshat Re'eh and so forth.
It could be, one possibility is this repetitions, or it could be, I'm assuming, is the assumption is if something's repeated, there's a good reason for it. Remember, we all grow up thinking Chumash doesn't waste words, which is 100% right. That doesn't mean Chumash isn't wordy. But being wordy doesn't mean you're wasting words. Sometimes being wordy is a way to get a message across. And the wordiness sometimes has a much deeper message. Now, it's not apparent right away, but you'll see almost every single time Chumash is wordy, there's some deeper reason for the wordiness. And the very fact it's been a bestseller, I'm not saying people read it so much. It's definitely a bestseller. That's because they buy it. Doesn't mean that's usually with Jewish books. They buy them, but they don't read them too much. But it's with all the criticism of how it's written, it's still amazing. People don't continue. Okay, I think we need any other questions?
Thank you very much.
Okay, there's a break for 2-3 minutes, and then next presenter.